Spirit Radio Podcasts.
The film Unplanned opens in cinemas tomorrow. And one of the characters in the movie is actually a former abortion doctor. And Dr. Anthony Lavatino carried out second trimester and late term abortions in his clinic in New York State, carrying out around 1,200 abortions during that time. He talked to our very own Steve Johnson about the film and what it was like for him personally to be involved in one of its key scenes. First, Dr. Lavatino talks to Steve about his years working as an abortion doctor and how losing his daughter, Heather, was a factor in him having a change of heart about his work.
During my residency program, training to be an obstetrician gynecologist, I did first and second trimester abortions. And for the first 4.5, almost 5 years of my career as an independent physician, I performed both first and second trimester abortions up to 24 weeks of gestation. Now, the first trimester abortions up to 13 weeks were suction D and C abortions. The later abortions after 13 weeks were suction D and E abortions. These are called dismemberment abortions, and the reason is when you perform one of these abortions, you have to literally tear the baby apart limb from limb. And I did these, as I said, for almost 5 years after my graduation from my residency program. Early in my training program, I met my wife. We were married and wanted to have a family of our own and found out very quickly that we had an infertility problem. And we were told after a lot of effort that we were unlikely to have children of our own. We were very fortunate to adopt a little girl that we named Heather in August of 1978. As sometimes happens when you do that, my wife became pregnant the very next month, and we had two children that were 10 months apart, my daughter Heather and my son Sean. Sean and Heather were figuratively and literally close. On June 23rd, 1984, our daughter Heather was killed when she tried to cross the street and was hit by a car. Anyone in the audience has children may think they have some idea of what that feels like, but I assure you, if you haven't lost a child of your own, you have no idea what that feels like. I hope you never find out. I don't remember how long after Heather's death, but I reported to the hospital to do a second trimester D&E abortion. And as I said earlier, you have to dismember these kids. And I reached in with a special clamp that we use and literally tore out an arm or a leg that's several inches long and just stared at it in the clamp and got sick. But when you start an abortion like that, you can't stop. You need to keep inventory. You have to make sure that you get two arms, two legs, and all the pieces. Because if you don't, your patient is going to come back infected, bleeding, or dead. So I finished that abortion, and I know it sounds strange to people, but I promise everyone that what I'm telling you is firsthand and true. For the first time in my career, I really looked at that pile of body parts on the side of the table. And I didn't see her wonderful right to choose, and I didn't see what a great doctor I was helping her with the problem, and I didn't see the almost $1,000 that I made, U.S., that I made in 15 minutes. All I could see was somebody's son or daughter. And that set up a period of time over the next several months that ultimately ended in my doing all abortions. I haven't done an abortion since then, and there's no way I will ever do one again.
The new movie, Unplanned, opens in Irish cinemas on the 4th of October. Can you tell us what the film is about and why it tells an important story?
The film is about Abby Johnson. Abby Johnson was a young woman who, as shown in the film, was a volunteer at Planned Parenthood in the United States during her college days, and ultimately became an employee of Planned Parenthood, and ultimately became a director of one of their clinics in the state of Texas. Abby Johnson was, like me, very dedicated to her work, and this is shown very well in the movie, to the point that Planned Parenthood named her Employee of the Year at one point. Abby had had a couple of abortions of her own, and one of them was a suction D&C abortion at Planned Parenthood. She had run the clinic. She was a very capable director, but she had never actually seen an abortion. And one day she was asked if she would assist doing an abortion by performing an ultrasound scan. On an ultrasound scan, you can actually see the baby in utero and you can see the baby moving. And she did this, and watching the baby move around, and suddenly the suction catheter shows up, and you turn on the suction machine is turned on and literally tears the baby apart. Watching this affected her very, very deeply. And ultimately, she left Planned Parenthood and started an organization that helps other people leave the abortion industry. This is her personal story. And I'm troubled when I hear newspapers and other places claiming that somehow she's lying or that the story is inadequate. This is her story. It is firsthand experience that she gained after years of working in a Planned Parenthood. And I'm amazed in this day and age of Me Too that somehow we're all supposed to believe women, yet they don't want to believe this woman. And that strikes me. That strikes me as very odd.
So would I be right in saying that you play the part of the doctor in this film, the doctor carrying out the abortion?
That's correct. I play the abortionist who performed that abortion that ultimately changed her mind.
What was that like for you to do that after all of those years away from being involved in this sort of work?
You know, it's very interesting. The writer-directors of the movies called me out of a clear blue sky and asked if I would take this role. And I told them, my gosh, I have no acting experience. And they said, no, that's okay. We think you would be very good. So my wife and I went to the set in the state of Oklahoma in 2018, and we shot that scene. The scene in the movie takes just under 3 minutes, but we were on set and filming for 7 hours, which gives you an idea of how these work. It was a wonderful experience. We were very well treated. It was very interesting to me as a non-professional actor to see the process. So it was interesting. People have asked that more than once. Well, what was it like? Did it bring back things? And filming the movie didn't do that for me. I was just struck by the uniqueness of the situation and, having a new experience. But sitting in a theater and watching the movie was very difficult for me because that brought it all back. This is an extremely well-made film, and audiences are going to understand what I mean when they see it, and very well captures the emotion and the feeling of being in an abortion clinic.
Dr. Levitino, have the methods and technology used for abortions moved on since the days when you were involved in these procedures or from the days depicted in this movie Unplanned?
Well, suction BNC abortions are still the most common way that first trimester abortions up to 13 weeks of pregnancy are performed. We have medication abortions now, which actually are portrayed in the film. So the technology portrayed in the film is current as far as what is being done with abortion procedures in the first trimester. These are current. This is what's going on. They're either done by suction BNC, as portrayed in the first part of the movie, up to 13 weeks, which is what it was portrayed in the movie. And medication abortions were also shown. And again, that's current. That's the way that one of those two methods are used to perform first trimester abortions up to about 13 weeks. Later in the movie, another actor portrayed a physician who had perforated the uterus of a patient, and she had severe hemorrhaging. She ultimately survived and was able to be sent home without going to a hospital, interestingly enough. And I wasn't involved in the shooting of that scene. But later, abortions can, they talk about abortion being safe. And, complications can occur. This is surgery. Infections do occur. Heavy bleeding can occur. Uteruses can be perforated. I've had that experience doing the number of abortions that I did. So what's portrayed in the movie is very accurate.
There have been some criticisms in the Irish press about the accuracy of depiction of abortion in relation to what the baby feels and also in relation to, I suppose, what the patient experiences. Have you seen those criticisms and do you think they're well-founded?
I looked very briefly and I did not have time to read the entire article in the Times that was published. But it was interesting. In the article, there was criticism and complaint that, the babies don't move purposefully at 13 weeks. Babies start moving at 10 weeks, and they move all the time. They're very active, and anyone who does obstetrics or does obstetrical ultrasound sees this all the time. No one in the movie said or even implied that the movement was purposeful. The movement is the movement. Babies move during abortions, and this is why some doctors like to do ultrasound during the abortion so they can have a better, they can actually have a view of what's going on. So that was one criticism, that, you know, purposeful movement doesn't occur at that stage. Well, nobody said it was purposeful. Babies move, and this baby was moving, and that was accurately portrayed. Another criticism was about, it seemed to imply that someone had said or implies that these babies feel pain. These babies are sensitive, certainly at 16 and 17 weeks. Now, there's a lot of controversy about this. I did amniocentesis procedures my entire career for genetic testing and for other reasons, not even for abortion. But you put a needle in, you know, through the abdominal wall into the uterus, into the sac where the baby is, and you draw some fluid out. Well, that's fine, except the baby's in there too. Have you ever gone fishing? You know the feeling when a fish strikes the line, you can feel it on the line? Same thing can happen. When you put a needle into somebody's uterus, it is possible to touch or to have the needle strike the fetus. Usually it's perfectly harmless, but you can feel them pull. You can feel this. They're sensitive. They know they've been stuck. Just like if I stuck you with a needle, you would pull away. And I've felt that many times doing amniocentesis. And we're talking at 16, 17, and 18 weeks of gestation. Now, this is 13. I don't claim that babies feel pain at 13 weeks. I don't recall anywhere in the movie where it was stated or implied that fetuses feel pain at 13 weeks.
What has the reaction to the film been in the United States?
The movie was a wild, extremely excellent financial success. In terms of people flocked to see this movie. Theaters were filling up. Whole theaters were booked up in advance to see the movie. The movie is extremely well done, as I said, and I'm very proud to have been part of the project. And I believe that the writer, directors, and the producers did an excellent job of putting together an excellent movie that portrays the story of Abby Johnson, her first person experience in the abortion industry. It's a wonderful film, and I urge people to see it from both sides of the fence. Make up your own mind.
On that point, who do you think should go to see this film?
Well, I think everyone should see it. I really do. Whether you claim to be pro-life or pro-choice, you live in a democracy, and that means you need to be informed. So see the film. Make up your own mind. If this is something you think is a great idea, watch the film. You know, as I said, form your own opinion. I particularly would want young people to see this film. Life is, the value of life is minimized to some degree in our society these days. And there's lots and lots of examples I could point to. Life is a precious thing. It really is. And I think it's particularly important for young people to see this movie. Now, I would not urge this for any person younger than, say, high school age or secondary school age, but I think that everyone should see this movie, and most particularly, I hope young people get a chance to see it.
And that was Dr. Anthony Levitino, who features in the film Unplanned, which opens in cinemas across the country tomorrow. And if you're interested in going to see the movie, you can go to www.unplannedfilm.com/Ireland to find out where it is showing near you. It certainly includes the IMC in Savoy, Tala, Dunleary, Eclipse, Bundoran, the Lifford, and all the Omniplex cinemas around the country. Our next guest grew up in the slums of Kampala in Uganda, but support from an Irish charity helped him to receive education and skills, and today he is one of the best known music artists in East Africa. He is currently in Belfast sharing his story of how Fields of Life gave him the opportunity to shine. On the line from Belfast, we have gospel rapper Levickson. You're very welcome to the show, Levickson. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm so blessed to be on Speed FM.
Good. And great to have you indeed. First of all, Levickson, can you tell us about where you're from and what it was like growing up?
I come from Uganda, a country in Africa. I grew up in a slum called Kosovo, which happens to be one of the biggest slums in Kampala. Yeah.
And you were the firstborn of 10 children.
Yeah.
That's amazing. A large family. Absolutely. I thought I was.
Yeah, happened to be the firstborn of not even 10, 13.
13. Wow. I'm the eldest of 7, and I thought that was a big family. Yes. But my goodness, first of 13. Whoa.
Yes. But I'm the only one who doesn't share dad amongst all my siblings. So me, I'm just a stepson in the family.
I understand. Do your family still live in the Kosovo slum in Kampala?
Yes, my mom and my stepdad. I never had the chance to see my real dad. I never grew up with him.
Yeah.
Which is a long story. My mom was raped when she was young by many guys. That was the first and the last time she met these guys. So, and that's how she got me. So from that time, she didn't see these people again. So
yeah,
I've been there with the help of God, you know, growing up. But it's not like I had a father figure in my life. Only that Fields of Life, when Fields of Life came in my life, they became my parents.
They were like, okay. They were like mom and dad to you. Can I just ask you, you know, was rap and dance music, was that always something that was important to you?
Yeah, I really loved music when I was growing up. Now, there's a church I joined called Word of Life Community Church in that community. We're given a platform to do whatever we want. So me, I chose music, and my other brother, Trinity, chose computer and graphics and all that. So the love for music came like that, and God has really been so good. He has blessed me through music a lot, yeah.
And how did you then get introduced to the Irish charity Fields of Life? How did that happen?
I got to know about Fields of Life in some years ago when I was 13 years old. Fields of Life came to us. They met us in the slums. That was the time when we lost a friend of ours. We used to sell weed on the streets and fight people and steal from them. So one day our brother got killed. He was stoned to death, and we were watching all this. So we had
That's horrible. You must have been very traumatized from that.
Yeah, very, definitely. It was not easy. So we used to hide ourselves in trenches. So that's when these Fields of Life guys came. I was invited to go play football with the school treasured kids, which was built by Fields of Life. So like that, I got to know Fields of Life. There's a guy called Neil Fox who I pray for every day, and who I love so much. He decided to pay for my school fees. He paid for my school fees. He took me back to school after getting to know my testimony. So like that, life really started changing, though it didn't come one night, but it took time and God did it, yeah.
Wow. Mm. How did you know, getting involved with this particular charity, how did it change? How did it make a difference in your life?
It really did, because you know, we used to hide. We never used to be around people. But when Fields of Life came in, they preached to us. We even gave our life to Christ. So we joined church. When we joined church, we were given what to put on. We were given clothes from the whites. From Neil Fox gave us what to put on. Then they used to serve us with porridge. We used to eat porridge, so we could not be hungry anymore.
Sure.
We used to get what to eat. Then also, it introduced us to many people, you understand, when our lives got transformed. So the change really came in our lives, and everybody was open, you know, to us. They could talk to us. They could share everything with us. So that really, that's the biggest change, transformation.
And Levickson, what are you doing now? I mean, you're full-time singing?
Yeah, right now I'm full-time singing. We have a record label called The Levy Nation. We also have a charity organization called 92 Hands.
Oh, 92 Hands, yeah. So what's that about?
We were born 92 Hands. It's a youth movement. It's an organization we started to give back to the community, or to give back to God, because we believe the only way you can give back to God is through loving people, by loving God, by loving people. We love God by loving people, and we serve God by serving people. So this is a movement we do. We try to give hope and to empower people around us. We have a lot of campaigns. We have Ask for Women, where we teach women skills and also give them money to start their own businesses. These are women who are traumatized. They have a lot of troubles. Some are sick. Some are infected with HIV/AIDS. Some have cancer. But we don't want them to lose hope. We show them that they can still stand and take care of their families, because many, their husbands have left them. So we also have another campaign for the youth. It's called the Elevate Program, which teaches also. We teach youth. The campaign is called Elevate.
Yeah.
The program is called Elevate. So we teach them how to use computers, how to build websites and do graphics with a lot of things, so they can start life, so they can feed their themselves instead of going to steal or joining prostitution. So
that's pretty extraordinary, really, in terms of intervention,
also,
really, isn't it?
We also have a sponsorship program, which is called the One Child Sponsorship. Also, we give out scholastic materials to kids to start in school, everything they need in school, books, pencils, pens, toilet papers, everything.
Wonderful.
And we have built two houses for widow mothers under a campaign called The Wise Builder.
Lovely. Yeah. Really, powerful work. So, Levickson, you still live in Kampala. How have people there reacted to your success?
To my success? People are so proud and, you know, and grateful to God for the life, because many thought I was going to die at the young age, which is true.
Yeah.
Because the life I was living in, many thought I was going to die. So really, this, my success and my transformation is giving hope to people. That they'd be like, oh wow, if Levickson turned into this, then also my son will change. My son will come to this. So it is really, I'll call it a big testimony. It happened to be a big testimony in all the slums of Africa, Kampala, you understand?
Absolutely. It is a powerful, powerful testimony and a great word. So finally, before I let you go, what is your vision for the future?
Our vision for the future is we have something we started with my brothers called the New Africa, where we want to transform lives, giving people skills, giving people the startup capital.
Wonderful.
And also promote entrepreneurship.
Yeah. I'm playing your song, Turn the Replay, in the background there, and I'm going to bring that up when I let you go. But rapper and Fields of Life ambassador Levickson, thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
God bless you. Thanks. Bye-bye. In our weekly Life in 5 interview, we get to talk to someone about their life, its ups and downs, and how they may have seen God working in it all. And they do it by answering 5 questions that they choose from a shortlist, which we give them, of course, ahead of time. In studio to tell us more, we have John O'Griffin, director and founder of The Surf Project. How are you doing, John? And welcome to the show. How are
you? Good, yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good man yourself. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm John O'Griffin. I head up the Surf Project. Yeah, I don't quite know where I'm from. I've lived around the place.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm based in Portrush on the North Coast.
Yes, lovely. Nice spot.
Exactly. Beautiful.
Particularly if you like surfing.
Absolutely. But spent half my life in Dublin and Donegal and moved around a bit. So when people say where you're from, I struggle a little bit. All good. Just great to be here. And running this project for about 6 years.
We figure we spoke to each other on this very show at the beginning of the project.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I'm absolutely sure we did, actually, So here are your questions.
Very good.
Number one, what makes you happy?
Surfing, first and foremost.
That's a
given. And would you believe curry? I'm a mad curry fan.
Oh, man. Yeah. Man, he's your brother over here. So tell me, what's your favourite curry? Do you not mind?
Chicken tikka dansak would be my chicken tikka dansak. But I'm a bit of a fan of everything.
Absolutely.
I worked in the curry house for a few years.
Yeah, and when it's well made.
I am addicted.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when you go to a place where they make it really well, like you go somewhere like Birmingham where they do the kind of balti thing really well, or you go to certain places in the kind of north of England where they just have a kind of a real, a very, very critical, native population are going, no, that will never do. And suddenly you're going, wow, this is really good.
So when I get to surf and then have a curry after, that's my ultimate day off.
Perfect, isn't it? Absolutely perfect. It's interesting, isn't it? I was just thinking to myself, a place like Bundoran, which I knew from my childhood.
Mm.
And Bundoran is a lovely spot. But it was always a bit mad, you know? And suddenly, I hadn't been around for about 20 years. I arrived into Bundoran and it had become this hub of surfing. Like yourself, love to surf. Yeah. And I was there to surf. And I suddenly went, wow, this feels totally different. Mm-hmm. Because actually, a load of people who have come off the water, been in, you know, like literally 4 or 5 hours on the water,
yeah.
And everyone's really mellow.
Yeah, yeah.
Aren't
absolutely.
They?
It's a great leveler.
It's just this beautiful, peaceful feeling in the town. Yeah. It's gorgeous. Something about surfing, I don't know what it is.
They talk now of the Blue Gym. They talk about how surfing and being in the outdoors and the ocean is good for you mentally, physically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something we've always known, but there's now scientific evidence to prove. And surfing's been prescribed to patients in the UK and around Europe.
Very good.
And the surf therapy charities starting as well, helping people with low confidence and self-esteem and mental health. So it's phenomenal. And we see it too. When people come out of the water, they're physically and mentally refreshed. And there's just something about being in the ocean. So there is a connection there for sure.
And I was even thinking about the way the surf itself, you know, where it just releases oxygen, you know, the ozone gets,
absolutely.
You know, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Tell me what your favorite Bible verse is and why.
Yeah, there's a few, but I think the one that jumps out at me is Proverbs 3:5-6. So it's trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but seek his will in all you do and he'll show you which path to take. That struck me, has continued to do, and I think especially with what I do with the project, which we'll ultimately talk about, but we've had to step out with this. And really, I think when I came to faith personally, when I realized that I needed to trust God with everything and lean on his understanding, not mine, that's when he showed me which path to go. That's where he showed me purpose, meaning, direction. So that's continued to speak to me. And I think it's a verse I like to share. And I suppose the project tries to encourage people and to think a little bit about that. You know?
It's funny, isn't it? It's such a good verse because it really challenges you in that part of yourself that thinks it knows better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because we just naturally try to do it our way. We try to naturally make decisions and we're pretty selfish really when we're thinking about it. But ultimately when we turn away from self and we really trust, that's where I've seen God at work and just a whole different path taken in life.
And particularly when you're under pressure, you know, when you're afraid, when you actually kind of are in a bit of a panic about how things are turning out, the instinctive thing is to kind of pull things in, make strong decisions yourself, and or go into freeze, which is the other thing that people do. Mm-hmm. But neither of those are particularly trusting in the Lord with all of your heart, are they?
No. And it's a nice verse to rhyme off, but it's a hard verse to live day by day.
Exactly. Easy to understand, hard to do.
Yes.
A time you heard something clear from God.
Yeah, I was a PE teacher back in the day. Qualified as a PE teacher. I worked in England for a couple of years, and I think for me there was a big turning point there. I'd been brought up in the Christian faith. My father is a retired Methodist minister, pastor, and so I'd been brought up in the faith, but I didn't really own it. I didn't really come to a realization of a full understanding of what it meant to have a personal faith in Jesus. And that happened when I was in England. I had the job, I had the car, I had the house, I had the full-time contract as a PE teacher. I was young, I had the girlfriend, I had it all. The world had told me I had it all. But I was really lacking in fulfillment. I was lacking. I was living for weekends, living for holidays, had the salary, and I just realized I was quite living for self, really, and had a kind of a was involved in church life, but not fully. And a turning point came when I was really searching for God. I was really searching for purpose and meaning and realizing maybe I wasn't living his way. So, but not many people knew that. And God spoke through a variety of situations and time, but very clearly he spoke to me through someone. And I was helping out in a local church one morning. I can't even remember what I was doing, maybe a drama or something. And this guy came up to me, a very prestigious retired surgeon. He was from India. He was Rajan, very prestigious guy with a moustache and a super guy. And he just looked me in the eye and he said, "Jono, you've got a rare talent and it's been wasted as a PE teacher." And that just floored me. I was just, what? And that to me was God speaking quite directly to me to say, it's time you give me everything. It's time you trust in me with all that you've got, and I'll show you where I'm going to take you. And to cut a long story short, within 6 months, I had left PE teaching, and I was driving home on a ferry from England with my all my gear, my surfboard, and I had nothing lined up. I had a piece that I had to leave teaching. Now, I had applied for a few youth worker, youth pastor jobs, and ended up then becoming a youth pastor in North Dublin for the Methodist Church at the time. And that happened a few months later. But within 6 months, I had left PE teaching and was a youth pastor. And it just it was like 0 to 100, you know. But that was a. And then I think when I started the Surf Project a number of years later, there was another very clear calling. But that, to me, was a total change of direction in life. But interesting that the PE teaching and the training has all been recycled. I'm still teaching.
Yeah.
I'm still organized. I'm still planning.
Nothing gets wasted.
No. So, absolutely. But it was a massive turning point, and to walk away from a permanent full time contract. It's a big thing.
Yeah. And you know, well, there's a classic example of where you really did trust, though. You know, because that could have been the kind of thing that could have filled you with terror.
Yeah,
and it was just not to. You know,
just a peace, an absolute peace that I wasn't sure where I was going. I knew I was going to. I felt called into youth ministry, but I wasn't sure where that was going to be. But I had a total peace that's where I needed to go, and it would work. It would. You know, just trust in God's time and His way. So
Wow, that's fab. I suppose leading off from that, it very naturally follows. I suppose where do you see God in everyday life?
Yeah, I guess for me, being in the outdoors, the surf, I was on the beach yesterday. We had a group of university students up on the North Coast, and I just had to pinch myself going, this is my office today.
Yeah. Can you believe this?
Yeah.
And so it was lovely.
It was a lovely day. Today's not so good. But
exactly, yeah.
But yeah, just seeing God every day, around and on the beach, you know, walking the dogs, in the surf, just in His creation, it would be a huge thing. And for me, surfing is a massively spiritual thing. Probably one of the closest times I'm close to God, I think, on the water. And then with the job we do, the ministry we run, we're with people all the time. So seeing God in the other, seeing the image of God in people, and doing life with people. So I think for me, God, we know God is all around, but it's up to us to tune in to see Him, to tune into what He's doing, to choose to see His hand at work in this beautiful creation that we have. And I guess being around beaches and the outdoors, we get to see that firsthand.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Have you ever seen a miracle?
Yes, different types. The one, I think, in preparation for this, and I was telling to the guys before, I think. The story of the Surf Project is a miracle. Tell us. Yeah, it was an idea I had a number of years. When I was a youth pastor in Dublin, 90% of the young people I was connecting with were from a non-church background or loosely connected to church, be it whatever denomination or non. And I felt at the time that we needed a lot of the Christian-based youth events that are run by organizations and which are wonderful events, are very much for kids, I felt, who go to church and have been brought up in the church. So I felt we needed an event that was a bit more inclusive, that people could come no matter who they were, just come together. And so in 2008, we had this idea to run a Christian-based youth event around the sport and culture of surfing. And that started in 2009, and 85 kids showed up to a hotel on the west coast of Ireland. And little did I know that was the start of all of this.
Wow.
Over the next period of time, we started running summer camps, teamed up with Scripture Union back in the day, and then we ran an exchange program. And over the next 2 or 3 years, we started to duplicate these events.
And what's it like, you know, when you're in the middle of that situation and you see something that you have dreamt suddenly beginning to catch hold, like you're getting a bit of traction on it? What's that like?
Yeah, it was very exciting, and I think it was to see the people connect with it. So you have this idea, you have this vision, and then to see others come back to you and go, so young people saying, "Jonah, we've never understood God like that before.
Wow.
We've never understood Christianity like that before. This was cool. The surf was brilliant. We loved the hotel. We even had a disco after the teaching on the Saturday night.
Brilliant.
You know, and just to see kids from all backgrounds come together. So,
I mean, that's life to the full, right?
Absolutely.
Because you know, you're surfing, you're having a disco, you're sharing, you're doing a bit of worship, you're getting a bit
of
teaching.
And God is in all of it.
And it's in everything.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's beautiful.
And I think that's what was coming across. So then it was just then seeing these opportunities open, and then it was like the burning desire in you to go, we just want to get more people involved in this, and then just trying to develop it. So then in 2012, we really felt led to go step out in faith and go full time with this. So where the miracle really for me was seeing this evolve, but then getting to a point where we had a decision to make. Do we go full time with this or do we not? So we set up our own surf school. So we bought, at the time, 30 surfboards, 60 wetsuits, a van, a trailer. We put in a salary. We put a 5-year business plan together, and we had minus 50,000 euro.
Oh, yeah.
And this was in 2012. And within 6 months, we got commissioned then. We're an entity of the Methodist Church, so they support us and back us and so on. But we work across the denominations and non, which is super.
Brilliant.
And important. But in 2013, when we started full time, within 6 months, all of that money came in. And the provision on the project since then, and the doors that have opened, is just nothing but a miracle. To see something that was just an idea connect with so many people, now working with schools across Ireland, youth groups. Last year, 2,000 young people came through their surf project directly, and that's up on 1,000 from 2 years before. So just the continual provision, the doors opening. We don't advertise what we do. We don't pitch for what we do. I've never gone to a school or a youth group or a church to say, hey, come to the surf project. We are simply responding to the demands and the opportunities and the doors that God is opening.
Wonderful.
And it's just that, yeah, so that to me has been a miracle, to see something that started from nothing, a simple idea 10 years ago, to now a ministry that's actually going outside of Ireland and really connecting with people, you know.
So good. And you have upcoming treks to the Himalayas. What's that about?
Yeah, that's another element of what we do. We started the treks as a fundraising idea for the surf project. We're a self-financing ministry, so we rely on some funding and so on. So we organized some treks to the Himalayas. I've gone 7 times now to Mount Everest Base Camp. And
wow.
But we do a spiritual aspect to it. So we have a morning devotion and an evening devotion, when you read a psalm from the Bible or a verse in the Bible with 8 of the world's highest peaks behind you, it really changes things.
Sure it does, I can imagine.
Yeah. So we organize these treks. We bring people to the Himalayas. We event.
I lift my eyes to the hills. Whoa!
That's right, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So we bring people to the Himalayas and we organize the whole thing. We used professional guides in Nepal that we've been using for over 10 years. And we event organize. We ask people to come, pay their own fare, and then they raise money for charity. So the trek next year is in May 2020, and we're saying 50% of the fundraised money comes to the surf project, and 50% of the money you raise goes to a charity of your choice.
Oh, wow.
So that's we're encouraging people to maybe their local church, their local charity, Spirit Radio.
Let's put our name in there, folks.
Absolutely. And we need numbers. It's minimum 7 people to make it work, and we've had people from all walks of life. The spiritual times are optional, so if people don't want to enter into them, that's fine. But our experience has been, because such a bond is made as a team, you're walking, there's no roads up there, it's an amazing trip. We also have a smaller trek called the Himalayan Trail Trek, which is just a 5-day trek.
Okay.
So if people can't commit to the 18, 19 days of base camp all in terms of flights and travel, there is a 11 to 12 day trip, which is just 5 days hiking in a lower altitude. It's an amazing experience. We've brought nearly 70 to 80 people over the last 5 or 6 years, and we're going to go again next year. Our booking deadline is November. So we're just really putting the word out there.
Brilliant. And is it the surfproject.org to get in contact?
Surfproject.org, you'll get all the details. Yeah. There's brochures there, you can get a day-to-day itinerary, and it's all there. And
don't forget the Surf Project.
The Surf Project.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the Surf Project. Okay. John O'Griffin, director and founder of the Surf Project. Such a joy to speak to you, and just a really, really encouraging and indeed, you know, it really makes me feel like getting out on the surf myself. Except not this evening, everybody.
No
surfing in the middle of the coast. Storm. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
For Live in 5 today. God bless you. Now, there is a fantastic conference opening up next weekend, 11th and 12th of October, in the Helix Theatre in Dublin. It's especially for women, and it's called Fearless, Living Hope. In fact, we advertised it quite a lot, actually, over the last number of months. This is the second year of the event, and to tell us how last year's event went and what we can expect this year, in studio now to tell us more, we have one of the organisers of the conference, Aileen O'Reilly. You're very welcome to the show, Aileen.
Thank you.
Ronan, I'm great. Great, wonderful to have you here. First of all, Aileen, tell us how the idea for this event came up.
Well, my sister Miriam is the visionary.
Yes, yeah.
And she's the one.
She came in August, and she was really full of excitement about it. And she just sort of said, I think we should do this thing for women.
Yeah. Absolutely. She just felt like the Lord was saying, Irish women, you know, he wanted them to gather, and he wanted us from every denomination. That's why, you see, I'm in the Catholic Church. Maria, my sister, sure. is no longer in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
But what she really felt the Lord was saying was bring women from the four corners of the earth, from every denomination, of every colour, of every type.
Yeah.
And, you know, we might sing different hymns or songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some people put their hands in the air, some don't. But the point is, we're all serving God, the one Lord Jesus, the one Holy Spirit.
Amen. Well said. Well said. And you know, one of the things that she did bring up is the idea that sometimes, you know, you have an awful lot of women in the pews, but you don't have an awful lot of women in leadership. And actually, when you go back to your Bible, you go back to the Acts of the Apostles, and you go back, tons of women, involved in ministry of various kinds. Thankfully, I suppose over the last number of years, there's such a dearth of people involved in the clerical end of church that actually there's more and more and more women getting involved in leadership, which is a great thing.
Absolutely.
So. Tell me, before we get into the actual the mechanics, this is the second year of the event, as I said. So how did last year go?
Last year was wonderful.
Was it?
Yes, it was. And I mean, I have to say, with kind of 2 weeks to go, we were going, oh, we really want our more tickets to be sold. There was a little bit of panic in the air.
Sure.
But, you know, very Irish. People rocked up on the day. And we had just under 300 women in that room.
Brilliant.
And from literally the four corners.
Wow.
The atmosphere was wonderful. There was so much love and positivity, you know, and respect for each other's traditions. And just hugely positive. There was prayer ministry at lunchtime and people got healed. And there was really, you know, really, really wonderful stuff.
Yeah. It's great. I love that.
Yeah.
It actually, you know, it's funny. We did stuff at the Helix ourselves because I was MD on what was it, Eurostar for years.
Oh yes,
and it's a lovely venue, isn't it?
It is.
It's
super.
Really friendly and, you know, get around really easy and everything. So, what can people expect from Fearless, the event this year?
Well, our theme this year is Living Hope. And we have a fantastic lineup of speakers. We have Hannah Atkins from, she works with youth ministry, youth pastor over in a church called Audacious, which will tell you everything. But she will have fantastic life and energy in her. We have Kathy Philby as well coming, and Lucy Hill, who was with us last year. And Lucy is just super. It was interesting. My teenage daughters were with me last year, and Lucy really kind of spoke to them. And she's going to be talking this year about how, you know, how do you have hope when life is maybe not going the way you expect it to be going.
Absolutely.
Like life when times are tough. We also have Philippa Hannah, who is a super, she gets played quite a bit on Spirit,
she
put a little message actually up on our Facebook page, and it got 6,500 hits.
Did she?
Can't believe it.
Wow.
So she's going to be just great. She's wonderful. So there'll be great music.
Yeah, she was the Gospel Award Artist of the Year in 2019. So brilliant.
So major, it's wonderful that she's coming. Compassion Ireland is our sponsor, so we'll hear from them as well.
Sure.
And you know, they sponsor kids. So one of those kids who's now grown up will come and talk to us about how her life has changed.
Wow.
We'll have our Roll of Honour again, of course, honouring just, you know, the ordinary women who maybe, you know, run the coffee dock every year or do or every week, or they do, you know, whatever, children's church, or maybe they are on the missions, or maybe, you know, so every colour. And again, we're saying, whatever part you play, God has a part for you to play, whether we in the world considered big or small.
We were advertising. That was part of the advertisement, was just, you know, to get, have you got nominations in for that?
We do. We have quite a number of nominations. And in fact, this year, last year, Wendy interviewed them live on the sofa. We had the sofa sessions. But this year we decided to actually pre-record. So I went out and pre-recorded three interviews, three fantastic women.
Brilliant.
And just one is Moms in Prayer, wonderful organization that for all the mums out there who are worrying their heads off about their kids. And you know, it's natural, we try not to, but you know, we really need God in our lives to quench that worry and to deal with that worry. But Mums in Prayer is a lovely organization, so you'll hear all about them. And who else do we have? Team Hope. A lady from Team Hope, amazing organization. And another lady, Helena, who runs Life in the Spirit seminars, talks to us.
Brilliant.
So they're really great interviews. And then we'll have others on the Roll of Honour who we just simply honour on the day. And so important, you know, to honour those of us who are.
So you are actually still taking nominations?
Yes, absolutely.
And you're going to take it right up.
Absolutely.
That's brilliant. I just think that is really a really interesting a kind of add-on to the event, because it gives it an extra something. It's a great extra dimension, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The kind of honouring of people for work that they do.
Exactly.
And it's good for us to do it. It's good for them, because presumably, I just find like when you honour people hear things they just never think about themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And they hear stuff, people saying stuff about themselves, they're going, is that me you're talking about?
Yeah.
But it's such a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Because it builds up a kind of a gratitude in us.
Absolutely.
You know, because, you know, we get so into just being about ourselves.
Yeah.
And you can just say, no, I'm I'm kind of giving you something here, which is literally just my view of you. Which
exactly.
is like, you know,
and yet each of the women are kind of like, oh gosh, really me? Oh no, exactly. You know, that humility thing, which is lovely,
know, yeah.
but it's like, no, actually, yeah. what you do is valuable, and yeah. we are going to honor you.
so important. So. Who would you encourage to attend this event? Is it women of all ages? Is it younger? Is it older? Is it, you know, tell us.
It really is women of all ages, you know, and I'd really love to see, and in fact, we have a new student ticket rate. just introduced
Brilliant.
It. €20 for the whole weekend.
So get some teenagers.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, teenagers and students, absolutely, we want them there. And, you know, but the beauty of it is that, you know, our faith is the biggest connection. So
yeah, exactly.
young or old, you know, God is there for all of us. So we'd love to see that category, but really every single woman of every age, you know, I'd just say come on. And I'd particularly call out to my fellow Catholic women to give it a go, because it's not within our tradition really.
Yeah.
And I have had friends kind of going, but what's it for? And it's really for encouragement. It's to get out there. And because it can be tough out there in the world right now, it's very secular and our kids are out there and it's, you know, we all know what it's like out there. So to come together and feel really encouraged and to know you're not on your own,
right.
that God is working among us and with us. So I would say, come one, come all. And it will really
brilliant.
Be the most encouraging weekend. And it's, you know, it's a place to encourage each other to worship God and to learn. We learn so much from each other and from our speakers.
Yeah, absolutely. So Eileen, it's ticketed, I know.
Yes.
Can you give us the details?
On our website. So it's www.fearlesswomen.ie.
Yep.
And you can just click on buy tickets and you go in there. And to come on Friday and on the Saturday is €45.
Okay.
If you just want to come on the Friday, it's €25. Just on the Saturday, €35.
Okay.
And students, €20.
Brilliant.
You can also rock up in the day and buy a ticket at the door.
Great. Okay, yeah. Which is, and I, you just know...
Yes,
I do that too as well. Yeah, and this year, you know, as you said earlier on, you're partnering with Compassion Ireland, and that's, you know,
they've been wonderful.
They've
been wonderful to us.
Really great charity as well. So, remind us finally when and where it's taking place again.
So it's on in the Helix in Dublin, October 11th and 12th.
Yep,
and I think you should be there.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not going to be there because I'm
a
boy.
A yes,
but,
we are
but
completely,
everybody else.
Completely sexist event,
right,
and we will not accept your presence.
Exactly. Aileen, lovely to have you in studio. Thank you so much for actually dropping in. You're organiser of the upcoming Fearless Women's Conference. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning. And once again, Fearless, a national event for women of faith, takes place at the Helix, Dublin, Friday the 11th, Saturday the 12th. For more information, visit www.fearlesswomen.ie. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.